The following original talk show is rated S. Secession content may be upsetting to listeners who chant
USA! USA!
After the New England Patriots score a touchdown, Regal Cinema moviegoers' discretion is advised.
Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Mark Rosen Show. Great picks in the music today, Christopher, by the way. Nice job. Welcome back to the Mark Rosen Show here in the Crusade, gentle king-size truth from radio-size speakers. We're live. That means you can call anytime you'd like at 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. We were going to try to play bits and portions of the Neil Gorsuch, whatever his name is, testimony. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's all just Gorsuch. Okay, yeah. Gorsuch. It's just boring. And, you know, these guys have so many years of talking themselves out of corners and, you know, comparing. Senator, you're comparing apples and oranges. And says who? Says me. I say you're comparing apples and oranges. This whole confirmation hearing should just be a lesson in how fraudulent and fake Washington, D.C. is. It's a total scam. And yet there are literally, tens of thousands, if not millions of people glued to their television set right now watching Gorsuch. Gorsuch? Is that it? Gorsuch? Yeah. Okay.
There's no Gorsuch thing, man.
Okay, good. That helps me, actually. So they're sitting there glued to their TV. They probably have Rush or Sean on in the background waiting for their blow-by-blow commentary or some Fox News commentator. Folks, it's a big ruse. It's just a big scam. We got to stop playing into it. And Gorsuch and his opinion about precedent, which is very similar, by the way, to Justice Scalia's opinion about precedent. He will have his defenders all day tomorrow. There will be people coming out of the woodwork. In fact, you know, I'll sit here and watch my Facebook page, and already there's people who take time on their Facebook page to excoriate the Democrats from daring ask these questions. Not that I care about the questions, but they actually think that. I don't even know how to say it. You know, if the Democrats catch him saying something he shouldn't say, or perhaps raising a concern about how committed he is to stare decisis, they will excoriate the senator rather than listen to the error in Gorsuch's answer. They'll excoriate the senator who asked the question. So he gets pinned down on abortion, and people are drilling in now, as not surprisingly they would. They want to see if this guy is going to be like Scalia. Is he going to uphold stare decisis? And instead of focusing on Gorsuch's answer, which is he's going to be like Scalia, he's probably going to uphold Roe versus Wade, they excoriate the Democrat senator. This is the right versus left game. This is the blue team versus the red team game. This is why I can't even listen to this stuff. I used to. I can remember when Clarence Thomas, well, first Bork. I can remember when Bork was attempting to be confirmed for a Supreme Court seat. And I was literally listening all day on NPR when I was driving around. And I, you know, they would try to catch old Bork, and he'd seem to get his way out of it. And I'd be cheering. It's like, yeah, you showed that Democrat there. Same thing with Justice Thomas. I completely got absorbed by listening to the Senate hearings on his confirmation. And every time he would parry off a Democrat accusation, I would be mad at the Democrat. I wouldn't even, I just wanted him to win against the Democrats. It didn't matter to me what he said. It mattered to me that he won. He beat them Democrats. And on my Facebook page here all day has been, what does Al Franken know about anything? I don't care. I mean, what does Ted Cruz know about anything? You know, you'll never see those kind of comments. So, you know, anyways, let's get on to a different topic here.
No, I don't think he has any frankincense.
Oh, jeez. All right. I'll tip you a quarter for that feeble attempt at humor. So you should get a tip jar. You know, we should create a tip jar for you on my website or something. That every time you come up with one of your puns that I usually have to stop and think about for a moment, that people can go to my website and tip you 25 cents. That's what we should do. All right, I want to get to this article here. I was going to cover this in the first hour, but obviously I got sidetracked by other issues. This is from LouRockwell.com, and it does discuss why Washington, D.C. needs to be abolished, ended, totally, completely just ripped out at its core, roots, everything. Take it all out and get a bulldozer and push Washington, D.C. into the Chesapeake. And I'm not convinced I wouldn't want all the elected megalomaniacs to go with it. Maybe we should tie weights to their ankles and then get a big bulldozer, start there in Bethesda, and just start pushing eastward and until the entire city is pushed off into the Chesapeake. That's what I think needs to happen, and this article from Lou Rockwell points this out. The title of the article is written by Alice Sales. It's titled, What the New CIA Leak Under Leaks Tell Us About the U.S. Government. WikiLeaks may have finally done what many small and anti-government advocates have only dreamed of. They exposed the Central Intelligence Agency for what it is, a bloated government bureaucracy that has grown much too large to be restrained. Thus, let's not think about restraining it. Let's think about pushing it into the Chesapeake. According to the document dump released by Julian Assange's whistleblower hub, this list of highly confidential information regarding the CIA emerged from the agency's Center for Cyber Intelligence in Langley, revealing details on the agency's global covert hacking program. The CIA's hacking effort has been so powerful and effective, the leaks show, that it includes the weaponization of exploits used against products such as iPhone, Android phones, Samsung TVs, and Microsoft Windows. This means any of these devices can be used as a spying mechanism at any given time. But perhaps most troubling is the revelation that the CIA lost control of the majority of its hacking arsenal over time. That includes viruses, malware, trojans, malware remote control systems, and the previously mentioned weaponized exploits. In so many words, this means the U.S. government has handed over the key to the most intimate secrets of every single one of us to anyone with access to these lost tools. By allowing the CIA to grow so absolutely powerful, we also allowed the agency to be absolutely careless with our own lives. What have we learned from this? That regardless of how detached we may seem from politics, its influence and power grows as we refrain from restricting. You see, one of the great problems right now, folks, is that people are exhausted with solutions that never work. For those of you who have been in politics more than a couple of years, join those of us who have been in it for 35 years and have seen none of the solutions that supposedly were supposed to work, like getting the GOP back in control of Washington, D.C., not work. And so our natural tendency is to withdraw and say, the heck with it. I can't. There's nothing I can do. You can't sue City Hall. All these ideas wander into our heads and we get exasperated. We get exhausted. We're like, I can't do this anymore. And that is what they want. They want you to check out. And I will tell you that if you maintain the status quo approach to politics, voting, hoping, and coping, then you will just continue to be exasperated and exhausted because those solutions will not work. So we must engage, but it's how we engage. And I think the author gets it right. She writes this again. What have we learned from this? That regardless of how detached we may seem from politics, its influence and power grows as we refrain from restricting it, even if most of those involved aren't quite aware of the mechanisms that allow for this expansion. See, if we don't engage it, folks, there's going to come a time where we can't engage it. There is a point of no return. I don't know exactly where that point of no return is. Maybe we've already hit it. I don't know. But there comes a point where government has total control. And maybe I just think they don't. I'm willing to admit I could be wrong on this one. Maybe they already have total control, and I just don't want to admit it. But I'm not sure they do. I'm not sure that we still can't get away from these people. I would like to see us at least try and then learn for certain that we can't. And the way we would learn for certain that we can't is for them to kill us all and make an example out of Oklahoma. But I would like to at least say we tried. But I do know for certain that if we don't try, then there will come a point where they will have total control. Folks, these people do not answer to you. You voting out one congressman in one district doesn't mean a hill of beans. There's still 435, four of them there in the House. You getting rid of one senator doesn't mean a thing. There's still 99 of them there that are perpetuating the expansion of government power. You can't vote out a CIA director. You can't personally walk into the CIA and say, stop it, try it. Just go ahead. Go on down to Langley and see if you can't just walk right in there and say, where do I register a complaint? I'd like to talk to the director, please. Excuse me, security officer. I know you now have 74 guns pointed at me, and you're yelling at me to get on the ground and stop resisting, but all I want to register a formal complaint with the director of the CIA that I don't like what you guys are doing. Try doing that. You have no control over Congress. You have no control over the House or the Senate. You have no control over what the president does. You don't have any influence in the Supreme Court justices. You have no control over the CIA. You can't walk in there and register a formal complaint. In fact, if you write them, you're probably going to wind up on some list. You better come up with a different way to deal with Washington, D.C. So, yes, it will be exhausting if you continue the same strategy of voting, hoping, and coping. Well, you watch Kreslin's this time. You know how many times I've heard the phrase this time? As many times as you've heard it. And things ain't getting better, are they? As this article points out, the CIA got exposed to just how powerful they are. We may have crossed that line already. They may have enough on everybody at this point that they'll scare us all into submission. She goes on to write, as an Austrian economist, Murray Rothbard wrote in his pivotal essay, Anatomy of the State, the government is entirely wired to be, quote, that organization in society which attempts to maintain a monopoly of the use of force and violence in a given territorial area. That is not because there is a conspiracy to ensure every subject lives solely to serve the state, but because the government has no moral legitimacy. In other words, the government is only powerful, catch this part. In other words, the government is only powerful because we, the individuals, have allowed it to have sole guardianship over our property, including self-ownership and freedoms. Remember last hour when I was talking about why I will no longer vote? It's not because I think there's just something inherently wrong with voting. In some situations, it's a great thing. But voting in this particular circumstance is legitimizing the illegitimate. It is, in a weird kind of way, making that which is illegitimate appear to be legitimate. Huh, sounds just like something Antonin Scalia wrote. I want to read her line again. In other words, the government is only powerful because we, the individuals, have allowed it to have sole guardianship over our property. Think about that. By voting to continue this system, they can take your home away from you. They can. You don't. You think you own your home. You don't. Don't pay your property taxes. I dare you. I double dare you. Go a year without. You tell that tax assessor to go pound sand. You ain't paying. You own that property. I dare you. I dare you to tell the tax assessor in your county that you don't, that they don't own that property, that you do, and you ain't paying taxes for it. Let's see who really owns your property. But will you run to the polls and vote for County Commissioner Samuelson, who will just perpetuate the real truth that the government, your county government, actually owns your land because they can legally take it from you if you don't comply with four or five or six county commissioners? See, folks, as she wrote, in other words, the government is only powerful because we, the individuals, have allowed it to be powerful. And every 2 and 4 years, we run off and vote and tell it it's powerful. We agree to its power. Now, we may not like who controls the power, but we seem to be okay with the system that actually has total ownership over you now. With what we've learned in the past few weeks about the CIA, they know everything about me and about you. She goes on to write, once the government has total control over every basic aspect of our lives, those within government see no boundaries. Why? Because the burden of self-censorship or even personal responsibility doesn't lie within the individual any longer. Once the government employee crosses over, stepping into the world where he's protected by an invisible authority, i.e. government, he is no longer a person who is being led by the same morals that guided him before he assumed this position. He is now a bureaucrat. And as such, he now knows he will no longer have to be accountable for his actions. Now, we have a case here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that just got settled yesterday. It's going to cost the taxpayers of Tulsa, Oklahoma, $10 million to settle a wrongful imprisonment suit and death while in imprisonment lawsuit. A man was arrested for having a mental breakdown in his home. And when they came to take him away, he apparently resisted and they took him to jail. While he was in confinement, somehow, it's really somewhat unclear, he broke his neck. When the jailers came upon him, and it's all on videotape, They dragged him into a suicide room. The man was paralyzed. For 4 days, he laid there, sometimes complaining of thirst. But he couldn't move his arms to get a drink. Paralyzed. He eventually died in the closing scenes in the suicide room. You see paramedics there giving him CPR. You know who's paying for that irresponsibility on behalf of the sheriffs? The taxpayers. What amounts to about $10 per assessed value of their homes, that'll be added to their bill this year for 3 years until the settlement is paid. That's the game. That's the agreement that the county commissioners and the city council worked out when law enforcement goes off the rails and doesn't act responsible, when bureaucrats with badges are no longer accountable for their actions, the people of Tulsa are. Well, it's the same for the federal government. Remember a couple of years ago, or maybe just last year, when they opened up some mine and let out all this chemical from this mine, and it turned, I think it was the Colorado River, green or something. Did any bureaucrat go to jail? When's the last bureaucrat you can remember going to jail? I'm sure somebody's Googling right now. Let's see how many bureaucrats have gone to jail before. Folks, just in the federal government alone, there are 2.3 million bureaucrats. All of them, in some shape or another, directly or indirectly, tyrannizing you. Making it clear to you that you don't own your property. You don't really have freedoms and liberty. You only have what they tell you you have. And when they violate that, how many of them get handcuffs put on? The CIA violated the Fourth Amendment about 64 zillion times now. How many CIA bureaucrats have you seen let out with handcuffs on? How many of them are doing a perp walk today? We vote for this. I used to say to people probably something you used to say. If you don't vote, you don't have any right to complain. The new way is, if you vote, you have no reason to complain. If you legitimize your own tyranny, who are you to complain? The sad thing is that you're legitimizing my tyranny as well. I'm caught up in your actions to legitimize the illegitimate because of some nostalgic belief in America of yesteryear. This isn't the greatest system of government known to mankind. In fact, it's increasingly becoming one of the worst because the people are actually legitimizing the murder of 59 million babies. The people are actually legitimizing the theft of $20 trillion. At least the Germans, when they, to whatever degree they participated in the Holocaust in Germany, I don't think any of them went and voted for it. They just enjoyed the new prosperity that Hitler was bringing. We here know of a Holocaust that's going on and we go vote for it. Oh, give me some more of that Holocaust. We ain't had enough yet. We know we're being stolen from and we go vote for it, for more of it. She concludes the article with this. What does that have to do with the latest revelations on the CIA? When a lack of personal responsibility meets the always ravaging needs of this monopolistic state, the individual loses any sovereignty he has over his own life. The government worker becomes a thirsty member of the state, always looking for ways to undermine freedom, while the so-called private individual becomes just another government enabler under its control. The CIA has been careless with the tools it uses to spy on all of us, and whether or not we are guilty of committing crimes, it is clear that it has been equally careless with what it's extracted from us over the years. This invites abuse from the inside, which is what we saw happening within the National Security Agency after Edward Snowden revealed the massive spying program sweeping our personal data. We only have ourselves to blame for how out of control the CIA has become. And that's because we have forgotten, or perhaps never known, that the government's monopoly over our lives is granted, not warranted. Will the CIA leaks be the straw that broke the camel's back? She concludes, somehow, I highly doubt it. And she's probably right, because the pain isn't enough yet. The pain of tyranny isn't enough, and maybe the dirty little secret is the megalomaniacs, sociopaths, sycophants in Washington, D.C., in your state, in your county, will never bring enough pain to you to bring you to actually change. Maybe they'll just trickle you to death, take a little bit here, all under the guise of national security or investment in the future. Well, we just need a few more bucks. Yeah, Crescent, you know, you're making pretty good money over there. What, you know, you can put up with losing a few more dollars each paycheck to help out those in need and invest in our future. Maybe that's how they'll do it, because they really do need us. They need us to participate in the ruse. They need us to be willing accomplices in this great game where we are the pawns on a chessboard. They move around and we seem to be okay being pawns. Or maybe, as she wrote, perhaps we don't even know we're pawns. And we are harkened back to the opening of my show with Neo and Morpheus walking around the Matrix. Most people don't even know they're in the Matrix. And maybe that is going to be the epitaph written on the tombstone of whatever freedom and liberty was in hashtag this exceptional American Union. The epitaph will be, they never knew they lost it. And maybe we just don't know. Maybe the pain, the tyranny, the oppression is not great enough. And we've so insulated ourselves from the screams of the aborted baby or the theft of 20 trillions of dollars. Maybe we've so insulated ourselves from feeling about that as long as we can go to Olive Garden, as long as we can go to Regal Cinema, we'll be compliant federal tax cattle. We'll moo when they want us to. Bovine 1959 checking in here. How about you? So is this new information we've learned about the CIA going to change things? I don't know. What do you think? Give me a call at 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. You know, there are days that I'm optimistic. There are days that I can feel like, you know, we might be able to change this. And largely, as long as the scale is right, I still remain optimistic. You know me by now. I have negative 0.0 belief that that we can change things in all 50 states, or in other words, all 50 states will actually ever collectively choose to get rid of Washington, D.C. Let's be honest, that's the problem. That's at least round one to the problem. Round two is your state capital. But let's focus on the one that gives us the biggest grief right now. It's Washington, D.C. There is no chance I ever will believe that all 50 states will identify Washington, D.C. as a problem. No way. But I can be optimistic on a scale of the size of Oklahoma, that we can reach our fellow Oklahomans and make a compelling case to very reasonable people who probably really don't know that they're federal tax cattle. Make a case to them that we're going to do much better away from Washington, D.C. Much better. In fact, I'm not going to have time to get to it today. Well, let me read a couple of opening excerpts from this. There's the New Republic, which is a leftist kind of counter to the National Review. So if you know the National Review, the New Republic is the left version of that. They have a very interesting article out today. March 9th. It's titled Blue Exit, a modest proposal for separating blue states from red states. Now, it's a snarky article insofar as it, you know, takes on traditional Christian conservatives. I'll use that term just to describe a group of people. But at the end of the day, they're figuring it out too. Now, they're not figuring it out because they want to. They see the future, and they know that during this last election that their strength really was limited to a very few miles of geographic territory in hashtag the exceptional American Union. We've all seen the map. These little islands that are pocketed all across the North American continent in the part defined as these United States. You're talking about little pockets. I mean, you're not talking about large swaths of anything except the Northeast, if I recall. But they know the future. They see the future on that map, and they know that future politicians will try to be Trump light. They will animate. They will be more populist in nature. So they know that there's a chance that this populist fervor could continue. And in their mind, that means smaller government, less government. Now, whether that actually translates into that is a whole second issue. I don't think it actually is, because I think we're seeing with the GOP in Congress, they don't believe in smaller government. They believe in their kind of big government. But I think some of these people that are writing now and thinking about secession from the left side, they're snarky, and I think they're coming to the realization that we're probably going to be better off by ourselves without them. And this is an interesting development. I'll read just a couple of lines from the beginning of this this article. It says, "Dear Red State Trump voter, let's face it, guys, we're done. For more than 80 years now, we, the residents of what some people like to call Blue America, but which I prefer to think of as the United States of we pay our own damn way, have shelled out far more in federal tax monies than we took in. We have funded massive infrastructure projects in your rural counties, subsidized your schools and your power plants and your nursing homes, sent you entire industries, and simultaneously absorbed the most destitute, unskilled, and oppressed portions of your population, white and black alike, all of which, it turns out, only left you more bitter, white, and alt-right than ever. Some folks here in self-supporting America like to believe that there must be a way to bring you back to your senses and restore rational government, if not liberal ideals, sometime in the foreseeable future. Everyone seems to have an answer for how to do this. Every day, another earnest little homily finds its way to me over my internet transom. Think locally, act globally, or make art and fight the power. Or the old Joe Hill standby, don't mourn, organize. To which I say, don't organize, pack. Not literally, of course. Not even the good people of Canada would have to stomach a mass migration of moping American liberals mumbling, live locally, make art. What I mean is that it's time for blue states and cities to effectively abandon the American national enterprise, as it's currently constituted. Call it the new federalism or virtual secession or consciousness unplugging or uncoupling, though that's already been used, or maybe blue exit. Truth is, you red states just haven't been pulling your weight. Not for, well, forever. Red states are nearly twice as dependent on the federal government as blue states, and then on and on and go, they go with their snarky commentary, all leading to this idea. And about halfway in the article, it says, so here's my modest proposal. You go your ways, we go ours. We give up, you win. From now on, we'll treat the animating ideal on which the United States was founded out of many, one, as dead and buried. It's good to see that a major leftist news site would come up and further the discussion about secession. Because, folks, that is the answer. It will always be the answer. You may not like it now. And you may say, well, Kressler said, you know, I'm in a discussion with somebody on Facebook today who's convinced that secession is illegal. Of course, when I point out to her that there's nothing that suggests it's illegal, she nevertheless is convinced that it's illegal. So I recognize we have a long way to go, but you got to start somewhere. Well, and I advocate this because I actually do, and from the bottom of my heart, believe that is the solution going forward. Mainly because I believe what Don Livingston has talked about, Professor Don Livingston has talked about for years, decades, really. This thing that we call America is too big to be managed by 535 people in Washington, D.C. It's just a silly idea. And so we need to break it up into much smaller subunits and smaller till we get down to where government makes sense once again. Right now, it makes no sense at all. It's a football game. The red team versus the blue team. Who gets control so they can stick it down, ram it down the throats of the other team? We won, you deal with it. Never mind that we're dealing with 60 million people. With that, I want to close just with a section from the Swiss government's website. I want to read real quickly what this thing should look like. When we think about secession, I wish the folks over there at New Republic would read this document on the Swiss government's website as they describe federalism, the smaller branches being the most powerful, smaller branches of government being the most powerful. The least powerful is the central government in Bern. This is how they describe it. Swiss politics is played out at three levels: the Confederation, the cantons, and the communes. Each has the autonomy to decide on certain matters in accordance with the principle of subsidiarity. A decision is made at a higher level only when it is beyond the powers of the lower level to do so. Switzerland is a federalist state. This means that state powers are divided between the Confederation, the canton and the communes. The cantons and the communes have extensive powers and have their own sources of income. This is an example of the application of the principle of subsidiarity. Federalism makes it possible to enjoy diversity within a single entity. See, they may call themselves Swiss, but really Switzerland is a very diverse population. For Switzerland, with its four national languages and its highly diverse geographical landscapes, federalism makes an important contribution to social cohesion. See, we don't have federalism here. We have nationalism, where the borders of the states really mean very little. To the Swiss, the canton, the borders of the cantons, which are kind of equivalent to our states, mean a great deal. They mean nothing here. We got Neil Gorsuch up there who will strike down a state border if it suits him. They go on to write principle of subsidiarity. Under the principle of subsidiarity, nothing that can be done at a lower political level should be done at a higher political level. If, for example, a commune is unable to deal with a certain task, the next higher political level, i.e. the canton, has the duty to provide the support. Next title of the description of federalism in Switzerland. The Confederation. Powers conferred by the Constitution. The Confederation is the Swiss term for the state. The Confederation is responsible wherever it is empowered by the federal constitution, for example, for foreign and security policy, for customs and monetary matters, for legislation that applies nationally, for defense. Tasks that are not expressly designated as federal matters expressly are the responsibility of the cantons. The cantons have a high degree of autonomy. At the next lower political level are the cantons, the states that make up Switzerland. Under the federal constitution, all the cantons have equal status and rights, and when compared with similar political systems in other countries, they have an extensive range of powers. Health, education, culture are example of policy areas in which they will have a large degree of autonomy. Each canton has its own constitution, parliament, government, and courts. Cantonal parliament size ranges from 50 to 180 members, all elected by the people. In most cantons, under a system of proportional representation, the cantonal governments are also elected by the people, in most cases under a first-past-the-post system. People's assemblies and an ancient form of direct democracy are still convened in the cantons of Glarus and Appenzell Innerrhoden. Those are two cantons where they still have a kind of people's assembly. They don't even have a legislature. That's the difference. You can't do that here. And if Louisiana wanted to just have a people's assembly once a year, they would not be allowed to under our system. Communes. They are largely autonomous. The smallest political entity is the commune. Currently, there are around 2,300 of these. Around a fifth of the communes, normally those that are cities or larger towns, have their own parliaments. Four-fifths, on the other hand, reach their decisions in the direct democratic form of the communal assembly, in which all residents who are entitled to vote can participate. In these communes, residents do not elect representatives to make decisions for them, but they make decisions for themselves and elect an executive body to carry them out. How different is that, folks? In addition to the tasks assigned to the commune by the Confederation and their respective cantons, the communes have their own responsibility for schools, welfare provision, energy supplies, road, local planning, local taxation. Folks, it is a massively decentralized government over there in Switzerland. Bern, the capital of Switzerland, does not have extensive power and has very little power over cantons and almost no power over communes. None. It's exactly the opposite here. If your city or town or county where you live gets crosswise with Washington, D.C. over a ton of issues, from energy to environment, to roads, the federal government will step in and tell that city or locale what it's going to do and what it's not going to do. It's totally the exact opposite in Switzerland. There is no powerful central government to come in and tell a commune in one of the cantons what they can and cannot do over welfare provision or over roads. There is no equivalent to an EPA that comes in and tells every commune, oh, this is how you will lay out your, these are wetlands in your commune. And you people there will deal with it. No. They're a step ahead of us, folks. There's a lot we can learn from them. Folks, this has been a volatile show. I recognize that, but I couldn't avoid it with Neil Gorsuch's testimony on Stare Decisis. We'll pick it up.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome to say Gorsuch. I mean, it's okay. He's grotesque and everyone.
I'll butcher it, believe me, a million times between now and the end of our run here on the Veritas Radio Network. Folks, please consider becoming a Founders Pass member. Don't put it off. Go to VeritasRadioNetwork.com. Click on the join button. You'll see a whole host of ways to join and continue what we do here in the Mark Creslin Show. You're listening to the Mark Creslin Show here on the Crusade Channel, King Size Truth, from radio size speakers.
That's never free. No one knows what it's like to feel these feelings like I do. And I blame you. No one bites back as hard on their anger. None of my pain and woe can show through. But my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. I have hours only lonely. My love is vengeance that's never free.